This is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
You are about to listen to a recorded interview with artist Marcel Zama. This interview was recorded on December 16th, 2024, here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Hey folks, you're listening to the Arts Talk radio show here, Eat Your Arts and Vegetables. You're here with co-host Derek Breckner. And unfortunately, our co-host Zoe LeBrun is a little under the weather today, but expect to hear from me and Zoe as usual every Thursday at 5:30 starting next week. And we'll back the two of us will be back together again to come to you on the airwaves then. So today we have a terrific and amazing special guest today. I'm very pleased and excited to say that we have a 30-minute interview with Marcel Zama. Marcel Zama is originally a Winnipegger, but has been living in the New York City area for about 20 years now. He's a well-known artist, originally from Winnipeg, part of the infamous Art Lodge. Of course, now has been exhibiting internationally for a very long time on his own. Currently, there's an exhibition at the Plug-In Institute of Contemporary Art, Ghosts of Canoe Lake. This exhibition is up November 22nd to March 8th, so you've got a bit of time to see it. Do contact Plug-In in terms of their holiday hours during the holiday season, but there's a lot of days where you can check out the exhibition. Okay, well, Marcel, I want to welcome you to the show. Welcome, and thank you so much for doing this interview.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, Derek.
Yeah. So, Marcel, I mean, there's so many things that we can talk about in a 30-minute interview with you, and I'm sure that over, well, certainly since you first kind of hit the scene internationally, what I would say in late 90s, with an exhibition in Los Angeles, you know, I imagine you've been asked a lot of questions over the years. Hopefully we won't repeat too many, but I'm maybe just wanting to maybe just have you maybe just talk maybe about the beginning of your history in terms of, you know, you coming to Winnipeg and then maybe progressing to New York, if that's possible. I'd also like to maybe talk about your years in art school a little bit too. Not necessarily this order,
yes.
But and I know that you have a partner, Shelley Dick, who is also been involved with the arts, and then of course your son is also a major collaborator too as well. It's Will, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, maybe we'll start from the beginning with you. Maybe we can talk maybe about the early days of you and the Art Lodge and then how maybe how you ended up in New York after 20 years.
Yeah, when I went to art school, I went at the same time as my uncle, Neil Farber, who's a year younger than me. He's more like a brother than an uncle.
Yeah, because he's technically younger than you, correct?
Yeah, he's 1 year younger than me. And so I actually waited to go to art school a year so he could finish school. And once he was finished, we went together at the same time. And because we collaborated a lot on art videos, and we were in each other's bands, and we drew a lot of comic books when we were younger together. And it actually made going to art school a lot easier because it didn't feel so overwhelming, and I also had dyslexia, so he wrote a lot of my papers. I just dictated them to him.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, I certainly remember going to art school and kind of being a little overwhelmed by all the academic parts of the program. You know, the art history and the Faculty of Arts and courses and electives. And so you were kind of one of those people as well.
Yeah, definitely. When I first went to art school, the University of Manitoba felt so large to me, and I didn't know for sure if I was going to go to university, because originally I thought I would try and just be a comic book artist when I was younger. But then later I realized I needed to try and get into university and get into the arts. I thought I could be an art teacher or something.
Yeah.
So, and then make my work on the side and maybe apply for grants and just get by that way.
So, so I'm kind of curious about the comic book side of things for you. What kind of comic books, and were you interested in like going to Comic World and things like that as a kid here in Winnipeg?
Yeah. I used to go to this place called Trader Pete's. It was like this old comic book shop on.
Okay.
I'm forgetting the street name, but he kind of had a few locations.
Okay.
And he used to let me just trade in anything and get comic books in exchange for it. So I used to go. This sounds kind of pitiful. I was very poor at the time. So I used to go to any electronics shop, and sometimes their dumpster would have like old electronics in it, and I'd take them home and fix them up and then bring them there.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. So anything that was like older, like anything from, I couldn't afford really old comics, but like anything from like the 60s or 70s that had. I really liked Jack Kirby at the time. Oh, I mean, I still like Jack Kirby.
Okay, but, so you were like more Marvel, DC, or you didn't really want to pick between the two?
I just like their style. Like my style is very different.
Yeah,
from theirs.
Yeah,
but I just really, I guess Jack Kirby actually probably was an early influence.
Okay.
As well, but I also like I knew of Raymond Pettibon already because of all of his punk rock album covers.
Okay.
From bands, but I didn't know his name yet or anything.
Huh.
I always thought they kind of had like a similar feel to it. And
yeah.
So my comics were kind of, they weren't Marvel really.
Yeah, no, no.
They were kind of alternative Marvel. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Something. if you think like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no.
I was in a lot of bands that were very kind of punk oriented. This is like going back to like 91 though. So this is like,
can you share any of the names of the bands that you were in? Were like they playing in the bars or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I was in a band called Albatross.
Oh yeah. I remember that name.
Professor Moriarty.
Okay.
Alien Hybrid. Weird country band called Tumbleweed.
Okay. Interesting.
And Dance-a-tron. It was a dance band. Sorry. What was that?
Oh, I was going to say, what musical instrument did you play in these bands?
Guitar mostly. In the country band, I played mandolin.
Okay.
My grandpa showed me how to play mandolin, like a couple of chords. I knew like a few, I could kind of do like a choppy, almost like a train kind of sound for most of the songs. Of that country band, and then guitar. But I was learning guitar still, so it was very power chord oriented. Oh, and then I also had like a puppet show that was like this weird gangster rap puppet show that was, I forget what we called it. I think we just called it Jeffrey and Humphrey, and that was with Neil as well.
And that was here at CKW, correct?
Yeah, yeah. My wife had a radio show. That's actually how I met my wife, was through a radio show at 9, but I think we were at maybe a Shins concert or something at the Pyramid Club, and I invited myself on her show, and my band played her show, and then I asked her out to being John Malkovich, and then we started going out after.
What a great movie to go to. It's like, that's perfect
yeah.
for you.
Yeah. It's funny, because I've become friends with Spike, and since then, and he says it's because of the movie that we stayed together so long.
So you became friends with who?
Oh, I feel like it's name dropping, but Spike Jones.
Oh, okay. Okay, Spike Jones, great.
But, yeah, he was just saying that that because of our first date going to his film, that we've stayed together since then. So it's been very funny.
That's amazing. I remember your wife. She was a really great person. She took a class with me at the Winnipeg Art Gallery, and do say hello to her for me. Very fun.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I think that's really interesting. You know, like I was also a student who was interested in comic books. Going to art school. You know, didn't really know much about art history or conceptual art or any of that kind of stuff, but I just knew I liked to draw, and I liked drawing comic books. And I keep thinking there's another person I know. He used to do the album covers for the Crash Test Dummies. His name is Kevin Much, and he was also into comic books and went to the art school, too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, did you ever come across him?
I actually met Kevin. Yeah, I met Kevin Much when I went to L.A. for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne Barwell and Allison Norland, I think they knew him.
Yeah, yeah.
So we hung out with them a little bit.
Allison and Kevin and I were in the same class together in art school, so Kevin definitely knew Allison.
Okay.
And I think Kevin was on the board at Plugin at some point. I don't know if it was when Wayne was there or not, but yeah.
Yeah, because he lived in L.A. for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He started his own sort of like Photoshop, photo retouching company in the 90s.
He was like the first digital print.
Right.
I think.
Right.
In L.A. or something like that.
Right. So.
Try to say hi to him if you are in touch with him still.
Yeah, I am. I'll let him know. You know, this is the remarkable thing about you is that just to kind of, you know, and I think that, you know, certainly in the art world, people know this about you, but I think for our listeners, you know, it's quite remarkable the reach that you have originally as a Winnipegger, now, of course, not based there anymore, but you still have ties here. You come visit your family in addition to the exhibition that's currently up at Plugin right now. But, you know, when I've done artist residencies like in the U.S. and Europe, and people ask me, where are you from? And I go, Winnipeg. And they always bring up your name, Marcel. Do you know that? It's like
that's nice to hear.
It's like, you know, so it's like because they think, oh, Winnipeg. Well, that's where Marcel Zahm is from. This literally happened, in October. I did a residency in Spain, and there was this artist that met you, and he spoke very highly of you. I think he's an artist who was helping install a show, I think, in Malaga, Spain. Does that sound correct for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his name was Alejandro Benito Romero, and he's an illustrator, but he's also, you know, sound artist and, shows and, he was very excited to talk about you and his experience meeting you. So it's really interesting how much you are connected, across this globe. It's really remarkable. And, of course, your work is all over the place. You've been showing with David Zwirner for a very long time. And I think recently, I don't know, when did you get a commission for the New York City subway system, the MTA? When did that happen?
Yeah, that was started 2019, but delayed because of the pandemic. Yeah, that was a real honor. I submitted these, I don't know how, but someone must have mentioned my name to them. It would be interesting if I did a mural for them, and then they just contacted me, and they had a group of, I think it was five other artists, and we all did proposals, and then they accepted my proposal.
And what subway station are you at?
The one in Williamsburg at...
is it on
in Williamsburg.
On the L line or the G line?
Yeah, the L line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, if you go at the Driggs stop doors, it's there.
Oh, okay.
And then,
okay, so it's the first stop in Brooklyn then?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Or last stop, depending on which way you're going.
It was the first place I stayed when I went to New York, was in Williamsburg. My wife and I were cat sitting a friend. That was our, in Brooklyn anyway. I stayed in hotels in New York City, or Manhattan, I should say.
I'm just going to talk to the listeners here just a bit. So if you're just tuning in, we're halfway through an interview here with artist Marcel Zahma. Marcel Zahma is originally from Winnipeg, but is now based in New York. We're here talking just about, just all sorts of things with Marcel. But he currently has an exhibition on right now at Plugin ICA. That's downtown there, right at Memorial and Portage Avenue, part of the University of Winnipeg building. But the exhibition Ghosts of Canoe Lake is up until March 8th, 2025. Do check that work out if you're familiar with Marcel's work. It's a lot of brand new work. It's the first Canadian exhibition of his work in Canada in, what, 13 years, Marcel? Is that right?
Yeah, the last one, I believe, was in Montreal. So yeah. It's been quite a while. It's been nice to especially come back home to Winnipeg and have a show. Got to see everyone. Well, I guess I was coming back quite a bit, but it was good to see people. It was nice to have an opening again and meet everyone from art school that I hadn't seen for over 20 years.
Yeah, that was really nice. And, you know, I was...
Or more than that, 25 years.
Yeah, like, you know, I was quite touched by the generosity that you gave to everybody here. You know, you had quite a busy schedule here. I mean, with the opening, which went for a very long time I think it was Friday, November 22nd. That went from 8 to 10. And, of course, I think we went past 10 o'clock, but you were signing catalogs for people and generously doing a drawing almost, I think, every time you signed a catalog. And then the following day on November 23rd, you were part of a panel discussion with Wayne Berwald, Allison Norlin, and Robert Enright. And then, of course, you continued to sign catalogs that day, too, as well. And all while
that panel discussion was fun.
Yeah, I was really impressed.
It was great to see. I hadn't seen Allison for over, I think, 15 years or so, maybe more.
Yeah, and you know,
and she really gave me. She was my professor, and she gave me my first kind of opportunity because she introduced my work to Wayne Berwald at the Plug-In.
Right,
and that's how the whole kind of thing started, from showing at the Plug-In, and then Wayne offered to show my work in Santa Monica, LA,
and that,
from that show, that's kind of what gave me the start.
Yeah, and that was at the Richard Heller Gallery, is that correct?
Yeah, the Richard Heller Gallery in
Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles. Oh yeah, it was like this weird Biennale that they used to have in LA called the Absolute Biennale. It was like this vodka. It was all sponsored by vodka.
right. And lots of Absolute vodka merch and
everywhere. It's funny because I had no money for food or anything, so I was just drinking all this free vodka. I'm kind of out of it most of the time, but they had some hors d'oeuvres, so I ate those.
So, you know, I think that, you know, some people have probably heard this story, but I think it's a great story, and that I'm wondering if we could talk a little bit about, like, you sold some work there, the person buying the work became an important factor, and that maybe, if you don't mind me saying, the catalyst of how things started for you. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, that first show, it was a group show with Allison Norland and George Burns Miller. He's a sound artist that works with Janet Cardoff.
Yeah. Yep.
And Bill Smith, he was this artist from St. Louis. He made these really amazing kinetic sculptures. I had this wall of drawings. I was trying to sell them for $20, but they increased them to $40.
Right, because they wanted
Oh, no, you know what? The gallery takes half. So,
right.
That's why they're...
You're right. Right. So they wanted you to make sure that you get at least what you're usually getting, and they would get the other 50%, right? Which is a...
So I did sell them. I used to have, whenever I had a band show, I'd sell my drawings at the Pyramid bar for $5 each.
Interesting. So
I think I sold like two of them at most.
So interesting. So in some ways, like the Royal Art Lodge drawings and your drawings were kind of like merch for your bands. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. I used to have these cassettes. I used to do commissions at like Sam the Record Man and Into the Music and
Kelly Records.
Music Trader.
Yeah.
And Music Trader was later, but I make cassette tapes and take the old Dutch. I guess we ate a lot of chips in my family, and we used to have a lot of old Dutch boxes, and I'd turn them inside out and do a drawing on it of my band with Neil, and we make cassette copies of the band and put a bunch of merchandise inside of it, like old Star Wars toys and drawings and photographs. We'd sell them as this like little
amazing
collectible box or whatever. we knew no one would just buy the cassette tape, so we needed some kind of way to sell the cassette tape.
Amazing. So listen, we've only got about 7 minutes left or so before we end the interview.
But, oh, yeah. Sorry.
But I'm wondering if you could, I'm thinking of another teacher of yours, Diana Thornycroft. Would you be able to like summarize a little bit, like did you have a drawing class with her? Or
yeah, she was, I mean, that class, it was basically almost all the members of the Art Lodge were in it. So there was John Plipchak. I'm not sure if John Plipchak was in it, but Michael DeMontier, Drew Langlois, Neil Parker. And she had a project where I think we had to do something nice for people. And so we had a free sale. So we did all these drawings and had a pile of them. And you could take a drawing for free. And we give haircuts and shoe shines. And then we had also a bunch of old toys from the 80s that you could take for free as well. It was right in the middle of the university hall. So like where everyone went for lunch.
That's yeah, the university center.
During the lunch break. People would come by. And we actually gave quite a few haircuts, which was kind of surprising.
Did you have any training in giving haircuts?
I actually refused to do it. Mostly, I think Drew did most of them.
Okay. That's great.
I didn't want the responsibility.
Right. Good call. I don't know if I would have either.
Oh, and we did portraits as well. So you could get your portrait done for free as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was that project. And I would say a couple of months later, there was some student put on a show called the Fight Gallery Show.
Yep.
And
yep.
That's when we formed the Art Lodge. That was, we decided to get together. Or my band played with Neil Feather and I's band. Uh-huh. And actually, our Dance-a-tron band. So it was kind of like this dance band played. And then we talked about getting together to draw. And then we had a meeting the day George Burns died. So I'm not sure what day that is, but it's like March something.
96 or and, circa 96, 97, something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely 96, yeah. I think. And
you know, I didn't know about you. I guess the first time like I met with Allison Norlin, and she said, there's this collective at the art school and they're doing a performance at some place. I forget where it was, off of Notre Dame, or I can't remember what it was, but it was like,
yeah, it was probably the old studio, I guess.
Yeah, it was the wildest performance. I was just like,
yeah, we opened up the studio at the old Lions, Leeds. I think they were the Lions or were they the Eagles? I can't remember. One of those. Yeah. We rented out a studio over there, and we used to put on shows of artists, local art. Like we had, I think Carl Funk's first show was with us.
Okay.
And
who shows at Gallery 303 regularly?
Carl Funk, he's a really good painter from Winnipeg. He lives there still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he had a show at the WAG pretty recently.
Yeah, and I would say, like, the two of you, like, I think he shows at 303 quite regularly, and you show at David Zorner quite regularly.
Yeah.
It's like you're both kind of in the thick of the Chelsea art scene on a regular basis, the both of you.
Yeah, it's pretty nice when he has a show there. It's like you can get together and see him. Yeah. And Tim Gardner shows there, too.
Right.
He went to the U of M as well.
So listen, we got to wrap things up in a few minutes, but I got one more question.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you so much for this interview. It's really great just hearing these early story tidbits. And I'm wondering, you know, any advice that you would offer to an art student now who's going to art school?
Yeah, I think I found that whenever I really was excited and happy making the work, that it kind of shows up in it. So I wouldn't like compromise anything on what's like trending or whatever.
Right.
I just kind of go with that feeling.
Right.
I think it might be easier now with exposure because of the internet. Back then there wasn't really anything like that.
I mean,
so I think if you just are able to show your work and
I mean, teachers, that's great advice. I think, you know, I think wanting to do what you're doing and to be happy with what you're doing is important. I think, how do you balance that with, like, you know, the teachers are throwing all these different artists at you, different concepts, different ideas, different, you know, like Marcel Duchamp or, you know, like all these different art movements in the 20th and 21st century. I mean, how did you balance all that as a student?
Oh, I think it was good for me in art school to learn about all those artists. I kind of rejected them mostly, but I did take in like the art history, which was useful.
Yeah.
And then also it was good for me to experiment with different styles in art school. So it was kind of a good opportunity to see what I liked and what I didn't like.
Yeah.
So that part was good. Like, you do projects that I really wasn't into, but
at least
you know that you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I think it sort of gives you an informed decision now in terms of, I'm going to negate that, and that's okay. And I've got a decision based on my experience with that. And so interesting. You know, we're running out of time. I would have really liked to have talked about Raymond Pettibon a bit, because I know that you and him have collaborated, and there's stuff on R21, I think, with you guys. And I think...
Oh, yeah.
We're actually
working on a show right now. We have a show coming up in Istanbul in March.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone travels up there. I haven't been to Turkey yet, so it would be very interesting to see.
Oh, so you and him are going to have a show in Istanbul. Isn't that amazing?
Huh. Yeah, it's very exciting. He's actually working on a Beatles film. Yeah, I'm playing Paul McCartney. He's filming it. Yeah.
Oh, great.
He's actually my son's favorite Beatle. So. I'm kind of more of a John fan, and maybe George more. But actually, the older I get, the more I like Paul.
There we go. So listen, we've got to wrap things up. But I think, if you're available, I would love to do another interview with you when that film comes out. That would be...
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, my co-host was really upset today. She had health problems, and she was really upset being able to...
Feels better.
To miss the interview with you, but maybe we'll get you next time if you're open to that. But listen, I want to thank you so much, Marcel, for this interview. It was a real pleasure. Thank you for sharing these stories. And
it was great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, take care. Thank you again. Okay, folks, that's it. We've just finished an interview here with Marcel Zama. This was an interview that was recorded here at CKOW. The interview was recorded on December 16th, 2024, here in CKOW, 95.9 FM. We'll be back Thursday at 5:30 as usual, me and Zoe LeBrun, and talk to everybody again. And stay tuned for Tony the Brave. Talk to everybody soon. Bye-bye. Here in CKOW, 95.9 FM.
A purpose, a road, a mouthful of ignorance, a rose. All arrive and they go alone, like a dance of generations dancing, bound low, held breathlessly and spun.
CKUW 95.9 FM, where programming is made by, for, and about the Winnipeg community.